All right, we're still in the book of Nehemiah. What do we know about the book of Nehemiah? We finished up last week by looking at chapter 2, and that's the slides that are on the screen right now. And so they've come back, and they're ready to rebuild, and the points in chapter 2, the major points are Nehemiah appears before Artaxerxes, and then Nehemiah arrives at Jerusalem. We talked about some of the things that he did. And then there are those challenges from those government officials that are there. You've got to understand that the Canaanite nations that were there did not really want those Jews to come back. Here's the why of it. The Jews have been taken back over to Babylon, been over there 70 years. That property there in Palestine belongs to those nations that are living there. Now, they're not in Jerusalem because it's in ruins. But all of that outlying area and everything that the Jews had since the time of Joshua was now available for these Gentile nations. And so when we begin reading about the opposition of them coming back, it's their land, it is their property. And so they don't want these Jews ever to come back. Now, there's not a large number of them that's come back. You know, only about 50,000 of them that came back with Zerubbabel, and a lot fewer than that, came back with Ezra and Nehemiah. There's not like there are 250,000 Jews that's come back. You know, there's 50,000 people to occupy something that'd be almost like the size of Palm Beach County if you talk about all of Judea. And so so if we can just keep these Jews from ever getting a foothold in this place, then everything is going to be all right. Now, I want us to get the concept of towers and gates that will be mentioned in this chapter. And so slide number 3 talks about... It has a map of that city. I hope that's where that slide is. That will give you some idea, because in this chapter, in chapter number 3, we're going to read about they built to this gate, and they built to that gate, and they built to this other gate. It's interesting that the gates have names, and some of the names are rather interesting, but how would you like to have lived beside the dung gate? Now, you talked about choice real estate. I mean, you know, the dung gate must be just like living in Palm Beach County. I mean, not Palm Beach County, but over in Palm Beach. You know, my guess is, I think we'd all make the same guess as to what went in and out of the dung gate. You ever drive down the interstate and there's one of these big piles of dirt and you make sure you got your windows rolled up? That's dung gate, you know. That's the kind of thing. And so the slide that was there just a few minutes ago of the map of the city is from Nehemiah's day, and yet it doesn't list all of the gates by any means of all the gates that's to be found in that area. So let me get this computer, let me get this laptop cranked up and going good. Nehemiah has arrived in the city. He's gone out by night. He's surveyed the city. And remember, the ruins of the city were such he could not even go up and down the streets. He had to leave one gate and come out into another gate to even see the city. And now they are ready to start the building of the city. And so it's in chapter 3 that we read all of the details of the rebuilding of that city. And in Nehemiah chapter 3, he says, here's how it happened. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brethren and the priest and built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and hung its doors. They built it as far as the Tower of the Hundreds and consecrated it, and then as far as the Tower of Hanael. Now, on the map, you're not going to find all of these cities, but all of these gates and everything, because that's not an accurate map that shows all of the things that has all of these gates and everything. But if you've got the concept, You start at point A and you keep building the city and keep going around the city and rebuilding the city. And so you begin reading about all of these individuals who rebuild the city. Now, there's some interesting things about those who rebuilt the city, but I want you to look briefly in verse 2, and do you see a word that's in verse 2, not the name of a person, but a four-letter word in verse 2, and do you see that same four-letter word in verse 4, and then it's again a second time in verse 4, and then that four-letter word is in verse 5, and that four-letter word is in verse 7. You see the word I'm talking about. And so here, the divine record said, it starts right here, and next to him, and next to him, and next to him, and next to him. And then you get a little bit later in the chapter, in verse 8, I've got next underlined in verse 8 twice. I've got it in verse 9. I've got it in verse 11. You get down to verse 16, and it's no longer next. It's the change is word. I'm not sure exactly why the change of the word that says, and after him, and after him, and after him, and after him. I've got a blank on the screen up there saying, how many times is the word next found in this, and how many times is the word after found in here? Now, you can take a Bible program. If it's like Esau's, you can say, tell me how many words are used in chapter 3 and how many times each word is used. But we're not going to do that. I'd even thought about reading all of this, but it's just names, and it says, and next to him, and next to him, and next to him, and next to him. But there are some tremendous lessons to be learned. And that's what I want us to do, is to point out the kinds of people that were building houses, and especially in this chapter, building the wall. In verse 1, we read about the high priests and all of the priests. You cannot have leadership in the church if the leaders are not out in the front. You may have heard the story of the man who came through one of those western towns and everything, and he said, did a large crowd of people come through here? They said, yeah, about an hour ago. Well, which way did they go? Well, they came through this way, and they went out that way. He said, well, that's good. How long ago was it? He said, I've got to catch up because I'm the leader of that group. And I just think it's interesting that when you read in verse 1, you read about this individual that is the high priest, and he rose up with his brethren, the priest. And so what I want us to do is to look, and they are on the screen, and look at the quality or the different kinds of people that are out there building walls. Look in verse 5. There's another group to him, is the Tekoites. And then it says, of the Tekoites, who did not put their shoulders to the work of the Lord? Isn't that interesting? The nobility did not do it. I love the fact that in verse 1, you've got the priest, but here's the nobility. We need to understand the principle that is involved in relationship to doing church work is not just being those who are visible and in the forefront. A lack of having those who are visible and in the forefront doing the work is detrimental to the cause. What if everybody had taken that attitude that says, I'm not going to do this? In the 1930s, it could have been in the 1920s, you may have heard of the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee. It's where the Grand Ole Opry originated. There were, for 5 years, a citywide gospel meeting. It was almost a statewide gospel meeting conducted in Nashville, Tennessee by Churches of Christ. those books are still available, by the way. N.B. Hardiman, free to Hardiman University. N.B. Hardiman was the individual who spoke in all of those, The Spiritual Sword magazine, by the way, in the next issue, is going to have a review of some of those sermons that were there. And there's an amazing thing. It's amazing in this respect, that there were two newspapers in Nashville at that time, and there was a stenographer hired by those papers to record, a court stenographer, to record every word that Brother Hardiman preached. And the Nashville Tennessean, I forgot what the name of the other Nashville paper was. One was the morning paper, the other was the evening paper. It was, what was it called?
The Banner.
The Banner, the Nashville Banner. And both of those papers published the full text of every one of those five of those sermons. And they went for days and days. And the Ryman Auditorium was filled up. In volume number one, there's a picture made of the Ryman Auditorium made back in the 1925, the 1930, and you cannot see anybody in it. Their heads are about the size of a pinhead or something like that. My grandfather says, there I am sitting right there. Well, there's only about 5,000 faces in there, and he wanted me to believe that one of those was his. But here's why I tell that story. There were two brothers that they were trying to decide which one will be asked to do the preaching in this. And they went to these two brothers and they said, Brother Hardiman, we've decided. But the other brother said, would you lead the singing? He said, listen, I'd be glad to do the janitorial work. And I think he specifically mentioned, I'd be glad to clean the toilets to ensure the success of this effort. What a great attitude. And so here's the nobility said, no, that work is below us, and we're not the ones who are doing it. Look down in verse 8. What kind of people do we have working in verse 8? Who do you see there? Now, I want you to tell me what these men know about building walls in verse 8. Who's there? The goldsmiths and the perfumers. Tell me what on earth a goldsmith knows about building walls and a perfumer. I'm not sure what a perfumer is. Do they manufacture the perfume, or do they stand in the middle of the mall and as you walk by spray it at you? I mean, you know, what do they know about it? Here's the point I'm trying to make. That here these people have come back, and the Bible talks about they had a mind to work. And when you get a group of individuals, as diverse as this group is, and you've got everybody in it saying, I'm going to do my part. It may take a perfumer a much, much longer time to pick up that rock and put it in its proper place and however you fortified whatever kind of glue you put in there to make that wall. But now we got the goldsmiths and the perfumers. And look down in verse 12. Who's in verse 12? Next to him was Shalom, the son of Halohesh, I guess it is, leader of the half district of Jerusalem. He and who? His daughters. Tell me, how on earth can these dainty little women be out there building this wall? But they're there. He and his daughters. And it talks about, and so it talks about that individual, and he was leader of the half of the district of Jerusalem. Look in verse 16. Verse 16 says, after him was another Nehemiah, not the Nehemiah of this book, but he was the leader of the other half of the district of Beth-Zur. He made repairs in front of the tombs of David to the man-made pool and as far as the house of the mighty. Here's the point we're trying to make. And it's a point that has tremendous application in the church. We need to be the kinds of people that will do whatever we're asked to do. I'm glad that there was an N.B. Hardiman. And his name is renowned in many respects, not only because of his great preaching ability, but because of what he was. But the other brother, who was the brother that led the singing in the gospel meeting or in the Hardeman Tabernacle sermon, who said, I'd be glad to do the janitorial work in this place. And so whenever we talk about there's something that needs to be done, don't look for the high and the mighty and the places of renown. We need to understand that. And so here are these individuals who are involved in this. I pointed out the half district. We've got in verse 17. Verse 17, we've got the Levites. Who's that? Well, that's the priestly group of individuals. Not necessarily those who were priests, but those who were served in other priestly ways. In verse 18, there's that other half of the leaders. In verse 9, they are the men of the plains. What's that all about? They're not even going to live in that city. The people of God, Jerusalem, was built on mountains. There were three or four mountains inside the city and three mountains on the outside of that city. The most famous one would be the Mount of Olives. But here are the men of the plains. And so they've all come back and they're going to rebuild the walls of the city. Well, why are these men even there? Because we're brethren. Because we're here to help each other to accomplish all of these things. And in verse 10, there's the Tekoites mentioned again, and they built another section. We read about them in the early verses. I read that name just a few minutes ago. And so when they'd finished that section, they went and they did the next section. How do you do a great work? You have people that says, I want to be a part of this and I will do whatever I can do to help in relationship to this. And, there are tests, there's work that is to be done that is not high, that does not call a lot of attention to the individual who does it, but it is the work that everyone must do. And then, verse 28, the Tekoites are in verse 27, but verse 28, he built a wall beside his house. And you and I need to understand that his own children, if he had children, they'd say, my daddy is a part of building this great, and my daddy helped build this very, very wall that's right here. Isn't it funny? And I don't know, you maybe didn't grow up in the church, but isn't it great to go back to your home church where you used to go years ago, where your fathers or grandfathers might have been? You know how good that feels? It hurts sometimes when you go back, and it's not as big as it used to be, and it hurts to see that, but you can sit in that place and just have such unbelievable memories. The screensaver I've got on my laptop is of the West Huntsville congregation, and I don't know when it was made. I remember that wooden building that was there, and my dad, who was the youngest, I think, of five or six children, is somewhere in that photo. I cannot find him. You know the type of, they all standing out. Well, it's like the built photo we made to advertise the church. Remember when we all met in that corner of the building and that photo appears sometimes even in our advertising today. But there is that photo that was made of the West Huntsville congregation. And my uncle, Uncle Willie, my dad's oldest brother, he had a funny-shaped head and a funny-shaped face, and I can find him in that photo, but I can't find my own dad. But I look at that little, what memories you have. I went back and spoke at the 100th anniversary of the West Huntsville congregation several years ago. And it's where Glenn Colley is now preaching. And when Glenn was down here for a previous meeting, he said, Dan, I'm leaving so-and-so, and I'm going to place you may have heard of. It's the West Huntsville Congregation. He's done a great, great work, and you'll see why whenever he gets here. He builds it up. But at that homecoming, I stood up and read a letter that I received in this building from a person who said, "I'm glad to finally find your address." Said, I grew up at West Huntsville. And said, "I wasn't a member of the church. I was just a neighborhood kid." And he said, "And I shot a hole with my BB gun through the window. And I'm just worried about that hole in that window all of my life. And would you see that the church there gets this check to pay for that window?" Well, that building had been gone 50 years or more, but I was glad to be able to talk about the influence of the West Huntsville congregation and the world in which a little neighborhood kid shot a hole through with his BB gun through a window, and the impact that that had on him. And now, you know, 50, 60 years later, he says, "And I was able to give that check to the elders there to replace that window." Of course, they don't need the windows replaced anymore, but it says something about what was happening. We got to get through chapter 4 if we can. Let's get over to chapter 4, because what we've looked at in chapter 3 is just when you get to the end of it, all of a sudden, verse 32 of chapter 3, "And between the upper room at the corners and as far as the sheep gates, the goldsmith and the merchants made repairs." Everybody's out there working themselves like crazy. And there's something exciting about that. You remember the day in this building where we all went out and laid the sod that was out here? You remember that day? I'll tell you what I remember about it. I remember the fire ants that were inside that sod. You'd pick up, and Allie's shaking her head, yes, she remembers that. When you picked up that little 1-inch square, or that 1-foot square piece of that sod, or however 1x2 or whatever, however big it was, you just prayed that it didn't have fire ants on it, and then you got to carry it over there and drop it in its proper place. Who did that? This whole church was involved in it. A part of the history of this church that very few of you will remember, it was over there on 36th Street when we painted that entire building in half a day. That occasion, we had 300 of the members, even little kids running around with little rags. You couldn't drop a drop of paint without a little kid being under your feet to make sure you didn't mess up the sidewalk. Newspapers heard about it. We didn't arrange for them to come out there. They came from the TV station. People in the neighborhood called the television station and said, "We don't know what's happening in this church. It's just covered up with a hive of ants almost." People had a mind to work. Now then, we get to chapter 4, and now we begin reading about those individuals who provide the opposition, those who mock the building of it. And so in chapter 4, we begin reading the name of an individual that we're going to keep reading about again and again. Sanballat's name is in verse 4. Sanballat's in verse 1. In verse 3, there's Tobiah the Ammonite. And so you've got these individuals that are there that are opposing them. And down in verse 7, there's the Ammonites and the Ashdodites and the Arabs are there. And they're there are these Gentiles. Sanballat is a Samaritan. When we get to the New Testament, we'll start reading about the Samaritans. And so Sanballat is evidently a part of all of this. And so there is that opposition. And the kinds of things that they're saying is to mock them. Look in verse 2. "Who are these feeble Jews? What are they doing? Will they fortify themselves?" That's said in mockery. That's the height of sarcasm. Here's this massively huge city. Will they fortify this? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? And every bit of that is just mockery of them and evidently mocking them. Do they think if they'll sacrifice to the gods because they're pagans, Will they sacrifice to the gods or not? And will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned? We know the answer to that. But there is that mockery whenever you're trying to do your very best and people are mocking you. When you've had that in the workplace, perhaps, where you're really trying and you've given everything that you can, and there's people on the sidelines trying to mock you and put you down. Sometimes that happens in the church, and sometimes it happens in your family. You know, what do you think you're trying to do in relationship to this? But there is that mockery that they're giving. And will they build this out of burned stones? Folks, you've already been defeated when you were a nation of hundreds of thousands of Jews when Nebuchadnezzar came down, and now you've got 50, 60,000 off your back. You really think you're going to be able to do this? And that's the kind of mockery that they gave them. And then look when he says in verse 3, whatever they build, if a fox goes up on it, it'll break down that wall they're building. Foxes were a real problem in biblical times in relation sometimes to those vineyards that they had. And that's why they put a hedge around the vineyards. You read about the hedges in the man who planted the vineyard and hedged it in. And it must be in Song of Solomon that talks about the little foxes and the damage that little foxes can do. And so here's this hedge and here's this vineyard and you've got it protected. And here's these animals that's coming in. Here's these small animals coming in and they're destroying the vineyard. Well, they're not talking about the vineyard itself. They're talking about the wall itself. This wall is going to be so flimsy that if one fox gets up on top of it, it's going to fall down. Well, what do you do whenever those kinds of problems come in your life? Well, listen to what Nehemiah and the Jews did. And here in verse 4, hear, listen, O our God, we are despised. And then they says, turn their reproaches on their own heads and give them as plunder to a land of captivity. We talked last week about boldness in prayer. I believe that's an element we rarely have in our prayers. Let us come boldly to a throne of grace. Now, how on earth can they pray that God will plunder their enemies? And that's why last week we talked about our prayers are built upon the very nature of God. It's not God that we are so good, but God, we understand you and we're asking you, Almighty God, to plunder them. We have just come back from captivity. Now let them go into captivity. Let them go to the land of captivity. And then listen to this. God, don't forget what they have done. Do not ignore, cover their iniquities, and do not let their sins be blotted out from before you, for they have provoked you to anger before the builders. That's pretty strong praying. I have difficulty myself praying prayers of boldness, because I feel so insignificant, and why on earth would God even listen to me? But you know why God listens to you? Not because you are almighty. He's the Almighty One. And this is His nature. Whatever a man sows, that shall he reap. And so that's why when your kids got beat up by the bully at school, you came home and told your mamas and daddies about the injustice that you'd suffered. Why? Because they knew that your kids would say, my daddy is bigger than your daddy. Yes, Richard, that's right. And what Richard says is, because we know, I'm paraphrasing, because we know the nature of God, then we can be confident in our prayers because that's the way God's going to respond. Did that get close to what you were saying, or is some other element of it I didn't get? And I love what he said, if I know the will of God. Sometimes we think, well, if it's the Lord's will, and we think predestination and what the will of God is, but Richard, you said it, if I know the will of God, and you held up the Bible. If I know the will of God is to do this, is it the will of God that the gospel change the hearts and the lives of people? Can we pray that God would help us in this gospel meeting to change the lives of individuals? And God, help us to find those individuals. I can do that boldly, can I not? God, give me boldness to be unashamed of my faith. And that is a part of all of this. First bell is rung. Let's look down in verse 6. So we built the wall, and the entire wall was joined together to half of its height, for the people had a mind to work. Who's that? Everybody. They get it up to half that height, and when that happened, Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard the walls of Jerusalem had been restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed. They became very angry. I think up in verse 1, they're furious and very indignant. And now they're very angry. And they, all of them, conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion, you know, and infiltration perhaps. Nevertheless, we made our prayers to our God, and because of them we set a watch over them, over against them day and night. Judah said, we're getting tired. The strength of our labors is failing. There's so much rubbish, we're not able to build the wall. And our adversary says, they're so busy with this wall, they'll never even know when we come in. We'll come in their midst and kill them. And the Jews who dwelt near these individuals who are named, these tribes who are named, they told us 10 times, from whatever place you turn, they will be upon us. Nehemiah said, here's what I did. I positioned men behind the lower part of the walls at the openings, at the gates, and I set the people according to their families with their swords and their spears and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Here's the reason. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters and your wives. Folks, what a sermon. What a sermon about what's happening in America. I'm not talking about arming ourselves and going and standing in the schoolhouse. I'm talking about dealing with this sin problem. And we need to arm ourselves and make our homes a place where there's righteousness to be found, and let that be the place where we fight for our brethren. There are so many spiritual lessons that come out of this. Look in verse 15. Verse 15 says, it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us about them coming in and trying to sneak in among us, and that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, everybody's to his work, and they worked so hard day and night. The bell's going to ring in just a minute. Verse 22 says, I said also to the people, let each man and his servant stay at night in Jerusalem. Don't go home, that they may be our guard by day and by night. Verse 21 says, we worked 12-hour shifts. There was a daylight shift and there was a nighttime shift, and we worked day and night, so neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the man of the guard who followed me took off our clothes except to go wash them. You know why they built this wall? Is there any lesson here for us to learn about Palm Beach Lakes? Let me make it more specific. Is there any lesson there is for every one of us individually to learn and to say, we're here to build the kingdom of God? What lessons can I learn from chapters 3 and chapter 4? I may be a perfumer, but there's something I can do. And we'll have a mind to work and work and work and work and work. through chapter 4. I didn't think we'd finish, and we didn't have enough time in chapter 4. We may come back and talk a little bit more about it, because our God will fight for us. We read that, didn't we? That's it. You are dismissed. Thank you very much.